The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's Reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Now it's time to return to the August 2022 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month was a guided tour of the intracoastal waterway. We were reading about food last week, and we're going to talk about some more food this week. The Calabash Deli, a Big Apple deli in seafood country. When a New York transplant found herself in Calabash without a job, she did what any other well-raised Long Islander would do. She opened a deli. Written by Allison Ballard. Now, this is the fourth seafood article or food article we've written this month, and every single one has been by a different author. On most days, you'll find Melinda Stein Sanford behind the big glass cases of meats and cheeses at Calabash Deli, greeting customers by name or whipping up a batch of meatballs for the dinner special. Her blonde ponytail tucked behind a baseball cap, Sanford looks like a natural inside this New York-style restaurant that sits alongside some of North Carolina's most famous seafood joints. And there's good reason. She comes from a long line of deli owners. Sanford planned to follow a different path. As a young woman, she set aside her family's service industry history to try architecture and then fashion merchandising before earning a degree in textile production management from the Fashion Institute of Technology in Manhattan. Along the way, she fell in love and eventually relocated with her boyfriend to the North Carolina coast. The relationship didn't pan out, but Sanford liked the area, so at 25 years old, she found herself in the tiny community of Calabash, far from home and with limited options for a career in fashion. She turned to the tradition that had been passed down to her through four generations of Steins, who had been feeding folks on New York's Long Island for more than a century. Sanford knew what it took. To run a deli. She worked plenty of weekend shifts at her dad's place, but could she do it in Calabash? That might prove to be a challenge. Sometimes, she says, it's amazing to me that I landed in the seafood capital of the world and opened a deli. To understand the irony of Sanford's predicament, it might help to know just how deep her family's hospitality roots run. The seeds were planted in the late 1800s when German immigrant George Stein and his wife, Catherine, opened both a bar and a confectionery store in Jamaica, Queens. In the 1920s, the family likes to say the Steins began the New York tradition of hot dog carts when George's son started delivering wieners by a horse and buggy on Long Island. The Stein's grandson, Arthur Stein Sr., opened his first deli in Glen Cove in 1950. The next generation, included Stanford's dad, continued the family food service business, having run similar establishments in New York ever since. So when Sanford found herself at a crossroads in Calabash, it was obvious that she should turn to selling cold cuts and salads. There was already a small one-man deli in town, and Sanford took it over in 1997. Within a month or so, she hired a co-worker, and over the years, her business has grown along with the town, adding seating, more employees, an outdoor dining area, more menu items, breakfast service, and lots of loyal fans. I call it a deli, Sanford says, but my dad disagreed. He told her that she should call it a delicatessen, a word that comes from the German term for delicacy. New York delis don't have seating. They're grab and go, she says. Sanford considers her business more of a hybrid between a diner, or maybe a lunch counter, and a counter service deli. Despite his disagreements with his daughter over semantics, Arthur Stein Jr. was a good source of information and encouragement before he died 2 years ago. We would talk about everything from ordering to pricing, Sanford says. One of her dad's biggest lessons was showing her the importance of hard work and customer service. He always said to treat people well and to treat your staff well, Sanford said. So she tries to remember names and orders, and she takes special pleasure in greeting customers who haven't come in for a while. Her mom, Sandra May, is also a key ingredient in the deli's success. Sanford's parents divorced when she was young, and her mother worked as a nurse while Melinda was growing up. Nowadays, May and her current husband also live in the Calabash area. She's amazing, Sanford says. She helps me be a better person. Sometimes I don't feel like she gets enough credit. Inside the bountiful, brightly lit deli case at Calabash, the Stein family history can be found in time-tested recipes that are still used in staples like chicken salad, tuna salad, and German potato salad. Even some of May's house-made pastries sit amid the deli fare. And yes, the recipes are secrets. I have one customer who's been trying to recreate the chicken salad, Stanford says. She says she can't get it quite right. Why? Because it's one special ingredient that I can't share. Sanford has added some Southern-style dishes, too, like pimento cheese and potato salad with eggs, celery, and onions. And there are plenty of specials, including her favorite, the Mel special, with turkey, Swiss cheese, coleslaw, and Russian dressing on rye. Add in new salads, sandwiches, entrees, and hearty Italian fare, like chicken marsala and baked ziti, and the menu could be, well, a little overwhelming. We do have people come in and say it's just too much, she says with a laugh. Over the years, Sanford has turned this corner lot just a half mile from the Calabash River into a community gathering spot. People stand at the counter to place orders for family fetes, while the friends and at tables gab over coffee and breakfast sandwiches. Throughout the day, it's a bustling center of comfort and food, and overlooking the whole scene is a wall full of historic Stein family photos. This year, Sanford celebrates 25 years in business at Calabash Deli. Meanwhile, she and her sisters keep their father's legacy going by working with his right-hand man, who continues to operate the family's deli nearly 700 miles to the north on Long Island. As of 2022, the Stein's Country Plaza Delicatessen has been a tradition in Locust Valley, New York, for nearly half a century. As for Sanford's slice of the Big Apple in Calabash, she believes that it adds complexity and a necessary counterpoint to all those seafood joints that made the area famous. Looking back, she says, I can't imagine doing anything else. Calabash Deli is on Beach Drive Southwest in Calabash. CalabashDeli.com. And now, a cut above, the Lock, Stock, and Bagel. At first, many Greensboro residents didn't know what to make of Reuben's and Rachel's, or Locks and Bagels. 45 years later, they wouldn't want their beloved local deli to change a thing, and its owners are happy to oblige. Written by Susan Stafford Kelly. Lox, Stock, and Bagel didn't spring into life 45 years ago, fully formed. It originated in the early 1970s as Mickey Lieb's wholesale meat distributorship in the same location on Battleground Avenue where it stands today. John Mailer, who'd come from the New York suburbs to attend Guilford College in 1969, met Lieb while working at the Pen and Pencil restaurant. They came up with the name Lock, Stock, and Bagel together. Then Meyer bought out Lieb in 1977. Meyer is the mustachioed, curly-haired apron guy with glasses, looking not unlike Tony Orlando of Tony Orlando and Don, who was also big in the 70s, depicted on LS&B's early menus, which still hang on a wall inside the restaurant. Initially, we were purely takeout, a package store like you'd see up north, Mailer said. We were the only place in town that sliced corned beef and pastrami to take home by the pound. pickles still came in barrels, and pretty soon a few upturned pickle barrels became restaurant tables. Still, Naylor had plenty to learn. One of the first sandwiches on the menu was kosher sub with salami, pastrami, bologna, and Swiss cheese. Greensboro's Jewish community was quick to object to the name, as combining meat and dairy is against kosher guidelines. Naylor wound up writing a letter of apology to a local rabbi, as well as changing the sandwich's name to the International Sub. Greensboro's residents had a lot to learn, too. Naylor constantly fielded questions. What are bagels? What are lox? Is lox? He correct. It's kind of scared them. Those first creations, the Italian sub, turkey club, super turk, cheese sub, are still on LS&B's menu alongside a slew of other sandwiches like the Hoboken, hot roast beef, cherry peppers, and melted provolone on a sub roll, and the Knickerbocker, beef knackwurst, sauerkraut, melted Swiss, and mustard on rye. Plus salads, burgers, and crispy knishes. You'll find Reuben's and Rachel's here, of course, but what you won't find are French fries. Deep fat fryers hadn't been invented in New York when New York and New Jersey delicatessens were opened by immigrants longing for familiar food. Not having French fries is part of what keeps LS&B authentic, says Patrick Kelly, who worked at and eventually bought the restaurant in 2017 when Myla retired after 40 years. Kelly worked at Horwitz's Delicatessen in Cary as a teenager and became so interested in delis that he wrote a college research paper on the topic. Authenticity is important to him, so he expanded LS&B's offerings to include more bagels made with New York water and imported from the Empire State, and cream cheese varieties. Yet true authenticity is evident in the restaurant's decor, unupdated, if you will, since the early days of neon beer signs, potted pothos plants, and Chianti bottles wrapped in straw. Have a seat at red formica tables, wooden booths, or the big banquette in the back. Knackwurst, Genoa salami, baked beans, macaroni and pasta salads, and pickled herring and cream or wine sauce are among the offerings in the cold case, where no leafy garnishes prettify the stainless steel tubs. I don't have time for that, Kelly says. He's too busy greeting four generations of customers and doling out chicken salad, the best-selling takeout, and Arlington's, the best-selling sandwiches, made of smoked turkey breast, Havarti cheese, lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise, served hot on an onion roll. I would argue, he goes on, and I say this with humility, that we're the busiest non-fast food restaurant in town. Just as Myler did from the get-go, Kelly arranges special orders from New York for the Jewish high holidays, like whole smoked whitefish and sable. Near the tub of tuna salad is an open box of Joiva treats, the raspberry jelly and chocolate candy beloved by the Jewish community. Don't look for fountain drinks. They're not authentic to delicatessens, Kelly says. But beside the varieties of root beer and Dr. Brown's sodas are LS&B's concessions to its southern locale, bottles of grape knee-high and RC Cola. At the entrance, five 5-gallon plastic pickle buckets are still for sale for a couple of dollars, as they always have been. And it always has been, too. Your choice of sandwich size is potato chips or incongruous but iconic carrot sticks, which, like our dill spears, are cut by hand every day. People like coming in here and knowing that not a lot has changed, Kelly says. One 94-year-old still picks up lunch for her 95-year-old husband, even though he's retired, Myler says, now 69, says. When I run into people around town, they recite the menu to me. Here's how an eatery becomes an institution. A name that doesn't change, a location that doesn't change, a menu that doesn't change, decor that doesn't change, that merely transitions into memorabilia. Generations of returning customers, delicious, authentic food. Meaning that if you think a devil dog is some kind of Hostess product or a state fair, think again. Here, it's a kosher hot dog with melted American cheese and spicy mustard, slathered with New Jersey-style hot relish. Goes down great with a grape knee-high. Locks, Stock, and Barrel is at 2439 Battleground Avenue in Greensboro. LockStockAndBagel.net. There is a sidebar, Double the Delis. Even some longtime Greensboro residents are surprised to discover a familiar menu in a second location. Not far from Lock, Stock, and Barrel, near the campus of UNC Greensboro, the atmosphere inside First Carolina Delicatessen is deeply familiar. Same cozy wooden booths, same red top tables, same hanging trailing pothos plants. And the menu is almost identical, other than a few variations like the Ridgewood, a black bean burger served on an onion roll, and the Nutley, First Carolina's turkey pastrami spin on LS&B's turkey Reuben. The latter, John Mailer says, grew out of then-employee Dean Vile's interest in serving turkey pastrami when they opened First Carolina together in the mid-1980s. Vile bought the restaurant from Mailer 6 years ago. Many customers don't realize that the two delis share an origin story. Mailer has had people come to him after visiting First Carolina say, "You're using their menu." Fortunately, there are enough Hoboken's, Hackensack's, and Harrison's, all available at both locations to go around. And that other restaurant is at 1635 Spring Garden Street in Greensboro, firstcarolinadeli.com. And now, Lunchbox Love. A childhood spent eating homemade sandwiches for lunch and a husband with an affinity for bologna inspired a Greensboro chef to test her culinary boundaries with a familiar ingredient. This is written by Linda Wells. "The best fried bologna sandwich I've ever made was an accident. The deli attendant at the grocery store cut the meat much thicker than I'd asked for, but fried bologna is one of my husband Chip's favorite sandwiches, so I decided that I'd surprise him with a grand concoction for dinner. When you order a fried bologna sandwich at a general store or lunch counter, fry cooks often make half-inch cuts around the edge of the slice to keep it from curling into a sombrero-like shape when it's cooked. This slice was so thick, I didn't even have to cut it. I heated the cast-iron skillet until it was almost smoking and placed the bologna under the scalding surface. When fatty meat with that many spices hits a hot skillet, the aroma is divine. After about a minute, I turned down the heat and flipped over the bologna. After another minute or so, a perfect char formed a border around the slice. I toasted two slices of rye bread, Chip's favorite, and topped each one with Duke's mayonnaise and American cheese. I also might have added a thick slice of Cherokee purple tomato from Stan Berm's farm in Cherryville. I plated the monstrous sandwich, put it in front of my husband, and waited for his reaction. He couldn't contain his surprise. With more expression than I've seen in years, he said, 'Good Lord! Now that's a bologna sandwich!' We'd both grown up with bologna sandwiches, but nothing that fancy. My own introduction to bologna was at the lunchroom at Claxton Elementary School in Greensboro. I often bought lunch from the cafeteria, but on special days, Mom would send me to school with a homemade meal. She always bought Oscar Mayer bologna. I remember the yellow and red packaging with red bands around each slice, and either Wonder Bread or Merita. Her recipe is a classic. Two slices of fresh white bread, two or three slices of bologna, a slice or two of American cheese, and yellow mustard. Duke's optional. While I was in class, the thermos of cold juice inside my metal Partridge Family lunchbox kept the sandwich cool until a bell rang and I took my seat in the cafeteria. Meanwhile, Chip's mom, Nancy Wells, a Monroe native and schoolteacher, made sandwiches frequently for her two growing boys. Every summer, the whole family would head down to Carteret County, where the boys would fish in the surf at Harker's Island and explore the seafood scenes in Atlantic Beach and Morehead City. Just after our wedding in 1986, I got a taste of Chip's childhood summers at the Crystal Coast. We joined his parents on their annual vacation to the Atlantis Lodge in Pine Knoll Shores as a sort of honeymoon. Nancy and I read on the beach while the men fished, as Chip had done as a fish. At lunch, Nancy prepared the sandwiches he loved growing up. Pimento cheese and bologna with bread and butter pickles on white bread, turkey, ham, and Swiss and tomato, pickles and pickled okra on rye, and a Wells family staple, roll-ups made of thick bologna stuffed with cottage cheese or whatever else was on hand. I'll admit, these combinations were a bit strange to me, but my husband couldn't have been happier to taste bologna at the beach again. As a personal chef, I spend my days eating and customizing menus and recipes, using locally grown produce or locally raised meat for my clients. I can't say that I've ever gotten a request for a bologna sandwich in my years as a private chef, at least not from the people I cook for whom I don't live with. On the weekends, I enjoy experimenting with different flavors folded into my finds from the farmers markets in Greensboro and occasionally happy accidents from the deli counter. But I know that Chip would be just as happy having a simple bologna sandwich. I'll make both with love. Whole bunch of sides. Well, let's see. We have three sides here. The first is entitled A Bunch of Bologna. Craving a taste of childhood? These restaurants and shops serve up classic fried bologna sandwiches for the young and the young at heart. Written by Rachel Malman. Rockford General Store. Built around 1890, Rockford General Store is in many ways a time capsule. Floorboards creak around the old-fashioned wood stove. Rocking chairs and benches for loafing line the front porch, overlooking the trains that pass by daily on the same tracks that brought passengers and freight to the historic village of Rockford 130 years ago. And a grill that makes hot dogs, burgers, and sandwiches, including a nostalgic favorite, the bologna sandwich. Co-owner Pam Foy grew up eating bologna sandwiches that her mother made for her, but she admits, with a laugh, that the Rockford sandwiches are much better than Mom's. Served on potato bread with hoop cheese, mayonnaise, mustard, chili, or slaw, the Rockford steak, as it's known by regulars, pairs perfectly with a glass-bottled grape knee-high on a hot summer day. It's too big for my appetite, Foy says. The bologna is sliced half an inch thick. I have to eat half and save the other half for later. Such a hearty meal is the perfect fuel for a long motorcycle trip. Foy says that bikers make the trip to Rockford specifically for the fried bologna sandwich. Decked out in leather jackets, munching on a childhood staple, the bikers are proof that this trusty lunch standby transcends time and age. They're on Rockford Road in Dobson, rockfordgeneralstore.com. And now, the Foothills Butcher Bar in Black Mountain. At Foothills Butcher Bar, today's special is written on a roll of butcher paper. The bologna melts. Hearty beef and pork bologna made on site is cut into quarter-inch slices, fried and stacked double-decker style onto grilled Texas toast, then slathered with sharp American cheese, mustard, and Duke's mayo. For weekend brunch, Foothills serves fried bologna on a biscuit, as well as bologna benedict topped with poached egg and hollandaise sauce. Started at the local farmers market 20 years ago by owner Casey McKissick, Foothills Butcher Bar continues to pride itself on friendly service and ethically sourced meat. Between the restaurant and its two food trucks, Foothills goes through 30 pounds of bologna a week. In the restaurant's open kitchen, McKissick renders beef tallow from the leftover fat, which he'll use to deep fry the restaurant's chips, tater tots, and fries. McKissick and his wife have four boys with whom he hopes will someday work at and eventually inherit the restaurant. For now, they help him raise pigs and crops on the farm. They've grown up around all this food, my childhood food, which is fun for me, McKissick says. Bologna is childhood. Fried bologna meant someone else was making it for me. 107 Black Mountain Avenue in Black Rock, North Carolina. FoothillsLocalMeats.com. And finally, in this group of sidebars, Yarborough's Homemade Ice Cream and Grill. They're in Sanford. We've been serving fried bologna since 1976, says Michael Yarborough, third generation owner of Yarborough's Homemade Ice Cream and Grill. Started in the 1920s as Fairview Dairy by Michael's grandfather, Phil Yarborough Sr. This old-fashioned ice cream parlor and lunch spot take pride in being family-owned and family-inspired. My mother would make me and my brother, Tim, bologna sandwiches when we came home from school or lunch, Michael says. It's a kid's favorite, I think, because peanut butter and jelly. Besides peanut butter and jelly, there aren't many people who don't like bologna. Today, Michael and Tim serve their own bologna sandwich at Yarborough's, featuring a half-inch slab of fried bologna on a hamburger bun, topped with iceberg lettuce, tomatoes, and whatever condiments you like, and an all-American take on a beloved sandwich that's not so different from the ones their mums made years ago. 132 McIver Street in Sanford, and they, the Yarborough's Homemade Ice Cream and Grill, are on Facebook. Well, we have time for just a few more things here. You know, at the front of the magazine, there are some pictures. And the first one is a double spread of a lightning storm. And the column itself is called View From Here. The caption says, Light Up the Sky in Maxton. The open skies over the small sandhills town set the stage for dramatic scenes, bright bolts of lightning, and at one time, airmen in training. In the early 1940s, this area was home to the Lorenberg-Maxton Army Air Base, the largest training facility in the world for pilots flying CG-4A aircraft, the most common cargo glider used during World War II. Today, the skies above Maxton's farmland still see powerful forces like this late summer thunderstorm. So, this picture, you think of it as divided into thirds. The bottom third are rows of crops that have been mowed down for the winter season. I would guess that these are corn stalks, which have been flattened here and left to become fertilizer for the soil for next year. Right down the middle is a long road. It might have been a landing slip. Well, one day, but it's a long road. It just disappears in the distance in some low trees that run all the way along. Now, the upper two-thirds of the picture is blue and purple and grayish-purple skies. And where the grayish-purple is on the right-hand side, the left-hand side being some clouds, there are lightning bolts that are going zigzagging left, right, up, down, every way, and then there's one big bolt that comes down, passes behind a cloud, and strikes the ground somewhere in the distance. Quite spectacular. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.